Skull and Everett present This Week in Horror.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Everett. Wait, you were what?
I'm Sickle.
Oh, okay.
And we're Sickle and Everett, and we're the Unhallowed Reviewers. And this is podcast number...
Who knows?
Three?
Who's keeping
Four?
Track?
I don't know.
You are. You're
I've trying. Already lost. I've already lost track because we missed last week because we're a bunch of losers. Well,
you know,
no, I'm the loser.
Thanksgiving sometimes in hell is a big deal. I mean, whenever you have that much pent-up anger surrounding your family in any given room, it's basically just like a, you know, it's like a hell fest. People just go crazy.
It's true.
So
you know, all the terrible negative family dynamic that you experience on a regular basis on Earth, it's just on steroids. It's on steroids and crack. It's just a mess.
We're used to it, but like, you know, you still have to. It's like the Purge. Think of it like the Purge. But anyway, we're not here to talk about the Purge today. I think Sickle wants to start us off talking about a movie that he saw this week that he didn't really enjoy too much.
Yes, and it's something that I really wish that I had been able to see in theaters. I guess now hindsight's 20/20. I probably would have been even more disappointed. But I was not able to catch The Predator in theaters, and I was really sad about that because I love The Predator and I love Shane Black. I think Shane Black is great.
What else has Shane Black done?
Shane Black is the director of films like Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, and he did Iron Man 3.
That's my favorite.
I can't remember.
Iron Man.
He may have written Iron Man 2 as well. I cannot remember off the top of my head. But the guy has done some of the best comedic writing that I've ever seen.
Yeah.
What was the other movie that he did with Ryan Gosling and...
Drive, Baby Drive? No, that's not Baby Driver.
No, it wasn't Drive. No, it was The Good Guys?
Oh, is that... I didn't see that one, but that one...
Nice guys. Thank you. Yeah, that's also Shane Black. It was very similar in the vein of Kiss Kiss Bang Bang. So if you like that movie, you'd like that one as well. But anyways, I was expecting it to be kind of goofy. I was expecting it not to take the Predator, the Predator mythos very seriously, and I was okay with that because everything that I've seen Shane Black do up to this point is clever and witty, even if it doesn't hit every audience. And so I'm like, okay, so now I'm combining basically my favorite type of humor next to, like, you know, Tucker and Dale versus Evil,
mm-hmm.
with one of my favorite horror icons in Predator. And so I'm like, well, how could that go wrong? And so I'm watching this, and you know, it's got Thomas Jane in it, it's got Keegan-Michael Key, and so it's like it's got a cast that I can get behind. Like, I don't understand why I wouldn't love this movie. So, you know, it starts up, and it's, you know, it starts okay, but I can already tell right off the bat, you know, the CG is not working out. Like, the CG, like, and it's weird because it takes these, like, hills and, it goes through these hills and valleys of the CG, like, quality, which doesn't make any sense to me. It's like they just were like, you know what, oh crap, we're out of budget, and we needed to actually shoot these three other scenes with the Predator, so quick, somebody do it on their laptop over the weekend.
So
like, that's what it felt like.
They have the Predator practical effects, and they're still with the costume. It looked like there was some of that. But
there is.
It's the new Predator
yes.
kind of beast thing. They're probably messing up with CG, right?
Correct. You
okay.
nailed it. Yeah, it's mostly the new one that they messed with, and that's... The original one, the one that's slightly smaller and everything, the suit, that looks great. For the most part, that was good. And I didn't really have an issue with that. And I'm going to go ahead and drop a spoiler alert on this. Well, no, wait, because you still want to see it, don't you, Ifrit?
No, you're good. I'll watch it in spoilers. It doesn't matter. I'm not watching it for its complex and intricate storyline.
That's true. I mean, who is? Even the original Predator wasn't exactly this complex storyline. But I did... Although I do want to do a slight just little side note there. I watched the Honest trailer for the original Predator the other day, and I actually really... I agreed with its initial point. Like, it was basically saying, why did you show the alien ship at the beginning? Like, it would have been so much more fun if you didn't know what it was and like as the movie progresses, and then you find out that it's an alien.
Oh, it could have been and like a monster like, yeah. or something like that. And
yeah,
now you're like
you don't know.
You're
what
like,
it
oh,
is.
I already know this is from outer space, so I guess I don't really need to think about that anymore. But in that same vein, they don't make you think too hard, so they're trying to spoon feed it to you.
Oh, that is like the little knick-knackiest tack. Or like, you know, a little critique I could have made of that movie. I love Predator. The original one is amazing.
What spoilers were going to give of the movie? Yeah,
I wanted to point out that I thought the bare bones of the story was actually really interesting. And it was probably the most creative. I mean, I can see why people would have hated it, like diehard Predator fans, is if you change some aspect of how they operate, you know, of your favorite thing, your favorite character, your favorite whatever. You know, if they change an aspect of it, it's like, oh, you ruined it.
Like,
I thought it was an interesting take.
It turns out they don't actually see an infrared. That's actually an implant or something like that.
No, it goes a little bit further than that, that general concept. So basically what happens is, instead of the Predators, like, they do hunt for sport, but they also have an ultimatum. Like, they have an ultimate goal in mind, which is hunt until you find, like, the high-end of the high-end species on each planet, then the reason that they take the spines and the skulls is because they actually take the spinal fluid, and they try to hybridize themselves with the high-end species of each planet.
That's actually kind of cool. Like, that really plays well into, like, the xenomorph thing, like, in a different way, right? Where, like, now aliens and predators, if they can find the xenomorphs, they can become the xenomorphic alien predator mega beasts, and it's like, oh, that's kind of cool, because it's just a different way to appropriate your foe's, like, you know, skills to your own thing, which is kind of sweet.
Exactly, and I thought that part was great. Everything else, but, like, that's the bare bones of the plot, and everything else on top of it is just awful. It's butchered by this fluff and this unnecessary attempt at scale, and they kill all of what made the first one, and even the second one, in my opinion, great. It's what made those great is just killed by this movie. Like,
so, like,
there's just nothing that works.
So you have the first two movies, which are pretty classic. Then you have the Alien vs. Predator movies, which are, like, they're good for some people, bad for other people. I think I enjoy them because, like, I enjoy those crap movies, right? But I still personally think that Predators is the best one. And I think it's just because, like, it was kind of a free-form, kind of interesting sci-fi movie with a lot of really cool stuff in it. And I think it'll always be my favorite one because it pits aliens versus a bunch of, like, crazy killer people. And, like, that was a really cool concept for me. And so, yeah, I think that's my comment on Predator. But we got to move on to the next topic. Is there any last things you want to say?
No, other than there is some concept art of, like, some of the hybrid designs of the Predator that didn't make it into the final movie, which is even more upsetting. But it's out there in places. I'm pretty sure I saw it on Bloody Disgusting, for example. And you should go check it out because it's pretty sweet.
Okay, yeah, so go check it out. We won't link it because that's not what we do here in hell. All right, the next thing we're going to talk about is going to be kind of interesting, you know, series of segues into something cool. But we're going to start off talking about two new movies that are coming out in 2019-2020 that are from two directors that have had some pretty good successes in the past. So you want to start us off on that, Sickle?
Sure. So the two movies we're talking about, the two directors we're talking about, is Jordan Peele, the director of Get Out, and most famously known for Key and Peele, for his
speaking
comedy
of
there.
Which, that was, you know, a good segue we should have used, because Peele is in Jordan Peele. No, Keegan-Michael Key is in Predators. Dang it!
Oh,
and
we had the perfect segue. Dang it! and then the other director is Jennifer Kent, who directed The Babadook.
The Babadook?
And they are both coming out with some new movies pretty soon. Jennifer Kent seems to be kind of stepping outside of horror a little bit. She's kind of putting her toe into the water of thriller a little bit more. It's this kind of revenge thriller is what it feels like. It's called The Nightingale, and it's set in New Zealand, where this woman is, like, tracking down this guy that, like, destroyed her life. And, like, hunting him down.
So it's kind of like Jordan, Last House on the Lefty mixed with, like, You know, what was that other one? I can never remember the name of it until it's too late. The one where they basically, like, rape her and throw over a bridge and then she comes back. I Spit on Your Grave.
Oh, I Spit on Your Grave.
Yeah, so it sounds kind of like that, but probably not as brutally violent.
Yeah, it doesn't... It thankfully doesn't sound like it's going down the whole rapey thing, which isn't my cup of tea. It sounds like it's kind of avoiding that motif.
Just murder and, you know, general violence is your motif, but definitely
yes,
no...
Please.
No.
Yes, more of that.
Okay, gotcha. But it is set in 1825 British England, so... Or a penal colony, sorry, in Australia. So that could be interesting. Different setting for that, but... Carry on, go ahead, sorry. Getting sidetracked.
Yeah. Oh, no, that's all right. No, that's a good sidetrack. So Jordan Peele is... this next year, he's directing a movie coming out that's called Us. Just U.S. Us. And I couldn't find anything on it. I didn't look terribly hard. From what I've read in the past in regards to it is that it's supposed to have kind of a Get Out theme in the sense that it's using horror as a vehicle for social commentary. Is what it sounds like. So that one, definitely looking forward to. But then he's also going to be directing a spiritual sequel to Candyman in 2020.
Cool.
Which I think is kind of... Like, I think it's cool, but it's also kind of weird for it to be his third feature film to be jumping into, like, a pseudo-remake thing.
But that's right up his alley, though. I mean, the whole Key and Peele commentary and all the stuff he's done with Get Out, like... And even the stuff he's going to do with Lovecraft Country, which is the other HBO series he's doing, are all about, like, you know, racial prejudice and kind of speaking up and, you know, like, representation. And Candyman was a huge film for that back in the day.
It's true. That is true. I guess I mean more... It's not... It definitely isn't that it doesn't fit his... thematic material. I guess it's more so that, like, that has generally been a place where directors go to die. Where they, his career is just starting. Like, the only director that has ever really succeeded in that is Paul Anderson. Paul W.S. Anderson, I should say.
Oh.
Who directs nothing but video game adaptations. And everybody's like, we know it's garbage, but it makes money, so we're just going to keep letting him do it.
Are you talking about you, Bull?
No, it's Paul W.S. Anderson. That guy, yeah, no, that guy's something else. At least Paul W.S. Anderson at least, like, knows that, you know, he knows what he makes, and yeah. He's not a cocky a-hole about it.
But
he
cool.
just likes to make fun video game adaptations.
It's cool to see, like, these directors kind of, you know, as you had previously mentioned off-cast, get their start in horror, because it's not the first time we've seen series of directors do this, you know? And these two directors, I believe that's the appropriate pronoun, are like basically like successful horror directors. They've done movies that are very, very good, like that got a lot of critical acclaim and things like that. And so it's really cool to see that kind of being what it is. And that didn't happen years after they got these movies released, like some of the ones we might talk about in a second. Like, it's now. Like, people are liking these directors now, right?
Yeah, that's a really good point. It's not like this is their, like, they're getting appreciated, you know, 5, 6, 7 movies in. It's like right from the get-go, people are recognizing just how good they are.
Mm-hmm.
I think another one that actually just pops in my head, I didn't have written down, but I think he's definitely worth mentioning,
Uh-oh.
Dear Lord.
Is he worth mentioning if you can't even remember his name?
Oh, he so is. That's really disappointing. But he's, it's the director of Blue Ruin and Green Room.
Oh, yeah. Did you see that? What is the movie? Jeremy Shalner?
Yes, Jeremy Shalner. Yes, that's
right.
What
was the
Thank
one he
you.
Did that's on Netflix right now? The one with the guy who dresses up as a cardboard knight?
That murder party. That's what I was going to bring up was he started out in horror too. Like, it's a horror comedy, but he started out in horror too. And that guy, he's kind of still
that. Like, he did Death Sentence, and he did like a Death Sentence remix, and he did Law Abiding Citizen way before he did Green Room.
Whoa. Same guy?
Maybe not. Maybe I'm just being crazy. Oh no, I'm sorry. That's not right. Everybody ignore me.
Ignore me.
Yeah,
he, but, like, I mean, he has still stayed in the general vein, but I think Blue Ruin would be a good example of it's not horror at all, but if you watch it, you're like, oh, I can see where this guy pulled some of his, like, where he got, he kept some of that horror motif in his movies, and, I don't know, I thought he was worth mentioning. He hasn't, definitely hasn't gotten the acclaim that Jordan Peele and, Jennifer Kent have gotten, but I think he's one of the best up-and-coming directors right now.
Jeremy or Jordan?
Jeremy.
Okay.
Jordan, too. But I just mean, like, he's not... Jeremy just isn't getting the recognition that Jordan is getting right now.
Gotcha.
And I think that will... I am hoping will come down the line.
But that leads us into, like, kind of our next topic is... We're just gonna, like, list off and possibly talk about some other directors that were in the same boat as, you know, Jordan Peele and Jeremy Sulner and... what was the other lady's name?
Jennifer Kent.
Jennifer Kent. Wow, they're all J names. That's crazy. but, like, people like Peter Jackson, who did, you know, Bad Taste, and then Dead Alive and Frighteners. That was Peter Jackson's, like, first, you know, within his first 5 to 10 movies or that he directed.
And yeah, his first handful of movies there.
Those ones didn't even get noticed till way after he had, you know, done certain things. The Frighteners is probably big, actually, but Dead Alive and Bad Taste, probably not.
Yeah, and then he goes from those right into Lord of the Rings, right into the Lord of the Rings trilogy, which is all he is recognized for now. Like, that's all anybody really thinks about when they think of Peter Jackson, is Lord of the Rings.
Yep.
And as we were talking about off the cast, but right before we started here, is like, it's funny to go back and watch Lord of the Rings knowing that this guy made Dead Alive.
Yeah.
Where you can catch all of that sadistic violence that still made it into Lord of the Rings, and you don't think of it. You're just like, oh, there's war violence. It's like, no, he likes to do that kind of stuff because he's a morbid little freak.
Yeah, and especially in Frighteners, you kind of see that there. Like, it's his, like, transition from the weird to, like, something that's a little bit more mainstream. Another one we have is we're saying James Cameron kind of similarly did something like that too, right?
Yeah,
like with Aliens and
exactly. Like a lot of people are like, well, that's not really straight horror. It's like, yeah, it's not. But I mean, it is and it isn't. But I mean, it's still action horror. Aliens is still a horror movie. And there's one where I think there's some wiggle room that you can have on this.
Well, The Abyss.
But if you go back and watch the original Terminator.
Yeah. I was going to say
that's got some pretty strong horror elements.
That scared me as a kid, like the way the robot looked and everything like that. Little demons still get scared by robots. I mean, we can't do much about robots.
You have no influence over robots.
But he also did The Abyss, which was another movie that, like, was... just terrified me. I don't want to go near the ocean. There's so many reasons why I don't want to go near the ocean. And The Abyss is one of them. But not, only one, but it's just those underwater movies, man.
Yeah, Abyss is a great example of kind of, like, that transition that he made from a more, like, horror angle to, like, kind of, like, this dark sci-fi, dark fantasy exploration, where it's like you watch that movie and you're like, oh, it's an adventure movie, and it's like, yeah, but I'm more uncomfortable watching The Abyss than I am half the horror movies because of the tension and atmosphere that he puts in that movie. You feel so claustrophobic almost the entire time that movie's happening. You feel like you're drowning when the characters are drowning.
Yeah, and I mean, let's slip right into the next one, which is Steven Spielberg, and that's another reason that I absolutely hate the ocean is Jaws. Like,
yes,
Jaws is terrifying.
And, like, I think that, I mean, you can jump down a massive rabbit hole. Like, we could do a whole show just on Jaws, where I've had arguments with other people to the point where they became my next victim about Jaws, where, like, they're saying, oh, no, this is just an action blockbuster. And I'm like, no. I'm like, yes, it is. You know, technically it's been labeled the first blockbuster, but it's a horror movie. And it's like, well, what makes a movie a horror movie or not? Well, and I think that there are a lot of different ways that you can approach that, and we've tried to break it down ourselves with our horror rating system. But I do think that one element, especially that you can look back on, is how does the movie affect its culture? Mm-hmm. How does it affect the social environment of the time? And Jaws jacked people up, where they didn't even want to go in swimming pools anymore.
Mm-hmm.
It led to endangering sharks because people like considered them the villains of the sea, and they had to kill them all. Like it really messed up American society for a while.
Well,
when it came to like ocean creatures.
There's just basic tons of tension in that movie too. If you don't even have to go that far, I mean, you can argue maybe the people you're talking to are crazy, but there's legitimate scenes filmed in that movie that are like meant to be tense scenes. Like when he's explaining the shark stuff and like the dead eyes and stuff like that, right? Like that is like almost something that you could say that like is straight either out of Stephen King, influential into It and things like that with the deadlights and all that kind of stuff. Like the way that they describe like sharks in that is scary, and the way that the movie builds tension is scary, and it's just that it's got various different forms of that. It's got, you know, the slow tension, it's got like the mass hysteria tension, it's got the unknown dark, like unknown creature tension. It just has almost every aspect of horror in it, exemplified in it.
Exactly. And then it culminates into like one of the most like disturbingly violent scenes in any movie ever that still holds up today, when the shark bites one of the main freaking characters in half.
Yeah.
Like that scene is horrifying. Like, go back and watch it. It holds up pretty well. I mean, you could tell it's a giant fake shark, but hey, it's real.
Yeah.
I mean, like, it's actually a physical thing is what I mean. And you just don't get that anymore.
Well, and like that leads right into like Jurassic Park. Like in Jurassic Park's another movie he did that is another like pretty scary movie when you look back at it, kind of like Terminator for James Cameron. Like Jurassic Park has terror in it, like legitimate terror. There's things happening in that movie that are scary. The dude's arm gets like bitten off, and the dude gets murdered by raptors in the jungle, and dude gets eaten completely whole in a bathroom stall. Like when the T-Rex is chasing the Jeep, that's scary. Like, all that stuff is like meant to induce a sense of panic, and that was part of the horror that's good about these directors, that they can pull it in even if it's not meant to be directly a horror movie, right?
Yeah, and they know how to use horror as a vehicle, even if it's in small doses in their films, to drive home what they're trying to do. And they know that it's actually a valid way to get an emotional response out of your viewer and out of your audience.
Mm-hmm.
And they use it to great effect in almost all of their movies.
Yeah, and especially in the one that I think we're going to spend a little bit of time talking about, which is not strictly a horror movie, but also one of Steven Spielberg's, which is Ready Player One.
Yep. Yeah, and Ready Player One, you know, if it's obviously it's PG-13. It's kind of angled towards, like, in its approach, it's angled towards, like, you know, the teenage, early 20s audience, but almost all of the content is for people that are, like, in their 30s to 50s that grew up with all of the media that it's referencing in it.
No, see, like, see, I don't agree with that, though, because you have things like Tracer in it, you have things like Halo characters. There's a lot of, like, I think they did a good job of adding to what Ernest Cline did in the writing of that movie, and like, or the writing of the book, because the book was very much like, I thought the book was very much like what you were saying, which is, it was very centered towards, the story could be read by anybody, but the content was really meant for a specific generation. But I think that the movie did a really good job of bridging everything from Atari to, you know, Overwatch, right?
You're right. No, that's true. You're right. I do think it is way easier for somebody, I guess I would say that probably you're sitting in the 30s, in your 30s, you would see, like, I think it's easier for you to grasp the span of everything that's in that movie.
Yeah.
That's the sweet spot.
Yeah.
Because you saw all the old stuff, but you're also familiar with all the new stuff. So you're catching every freaking Easter egg
mm-hmm.
that Spielberg just freaking compacted into this thing. Somehow, like, it's 2.5 hours, and he's like, no, I can fit it. I can fit it all into this.
He put a lot, let's just say he put a lot of Easter eggs in the movie.
Yes.
Which is weird in its own right. But speaking, we're not here to talk about just general movies. We're here to talk about horror and what we love in horror. And this movie actually does a really good job of doing something We're not going to sit here and review the movie because there's a lot of, we could spend a whole podcast on that too, but they do a really good job of implementing horror into the movie. And I think like part of that is because horror video games as a genre are something that is actually like legitimately huge now. I mean, like, it's a huge section of that genre, just a horror video games. And they did a great job of taking something old, which was in spoilers for anybody who's listening who doesn't want to, hasn't seen Ready Player One or doesn't want to know about it, stop listening now or whatever and come back in like 10 minutes when it's over. But they take The Shining and they kind of pull everything that modern horror does via video games and put it into The Shining. And that kind of made me want to play a Shining video game. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah, that would actually be kind of fun. Like that, what's that game that's super, it's like super small indie game that with Slender Man where you collect those notes?
It's just called Slender, I think.
And it's, oh, there you go. It like something like that where you're just wandering the house. Or even better, Amnesia. I guess that would be another game that would be, that you could do like a similar style of.
Yeah, like PT
of,
does just, that. The Silent Hill PT, like test game, like the demo they released.
Oh yeah,
that definitely does that, and it's creepy as hell to just be experiencing that, and that's what it is. Yeah.
Yeah.
Don't let Silence Ring say something.
Oh no, I agree, and I thought that. when I first was watching that movie. When I got to the Stanley Kubrick Shining scenes, I was going, man, some of this is pretty freaking intense for PG-13. Like, this is pretty intense. Like, I feel like if I were 13 watching this movie, that would have been a little bit much for me.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Because it basically pulls from every disturbing, intense scene from that movie, and it's just like, here it is all at once in a little 30-second span with no warning. Enjoy.
I did feel like that too, because it was like real sudden and then it was like over and you're like, oh my god, what happened? That was insane.
Yeah. And then like even though it's in a funny moment, even when they show Chucky, like there's this like little handoff of Chucky like a football, and like you're like, oh, this is funny. But also when they first bring him onto the screen, he's right in your face as the viewer, mm-hmm. like trying to stab you.
Yeah, and then I thought that was funny too, because Chucky in this sense is actually a weapon one of the characters is using to defeat other people, and that's so funny to me, because they throw it out of this car they're in. And it starts killing all of the Sixers and people around them, and you're like, oh, that's pretty funny, actually. But yeah, it was great. I actually really enjoyed it from an entertainment perspective, as far as just a movie. Like, you know, watching it without being too hypercritical, if you can watch it through the window of just entertainment and not try to like just critique, you'll probably enjoy it. But if you have that tendency to just critique and be critical, then you might probably not enjoy it very much. But I'm not saying one is right or wrong. It's just follow your heart, and if you can watch it without critiquing, you'll have a great time.
Yeah, it's kind of in the sweet spot of it. It's, I don't think it's like complete garbage where you have to turn your brain completely off, but also like you said, don't just be like, okay, well, I'm expecting to be learning life lessons here, and like I'm tear jerked at the end. No, just sit back and enjoy it. It's not gonna.
Yeah, Christopher Nolan didn't write this movie. It was. Keep in mind, most Steven Spielberg movies that are action oriented aren't like game changers. They're really good, but a lot of what happens in Ready Player One is pretty like Mary Sue-esque cliche type of stuff. You know, don't expect the characters to not succeed, because if you're going in thinking it's going to be some type of critical battle, you're probably going into the wrong movie.
Yeah, this isn't Saving Private Ryan, where everybody's just getting destroyed by the end of the movie.
Yeah.
Boy, spoiler alert, if you haven't seen Saving
Private Ryan. Well, I don't think that that's that big of a deal. It's a war movie, so most people die, right?
That's true.
Those are the...
I have to.
All right, one last thing I want to talk about. Any last Ready Player One comments?
Yes, the only one. I just wanted to make sure that we at least mentioned the director, because it's one of those things that will sit in the back of my mind. I just wanted to mention Ridley Scott as another one of those great directors where it started out in horror with Alien and progressed to just all sorts of different stuff after that. And it permeated throughout his work, but it's just great stuff. I just wanted to mention Ridley Scott.
Oh, you're fine.
He's worth mentioning.
I think that's, yeah, definitely worth mentioning. The last thing we want to talk about today is an article that we read on Bloody Disgusting. I shout out Bloody Disgusting. Thanks, John, and all the people that write this stuff. It's great. You consolidate a lot of things, so we don't have to. But basically what happened is that a new movie from Lars von Trier's called The House That Jack Built that stars Matt Dillon as a serial killer who sees all of his kills as art was given a rating by the MPAA of R. And then subsequently, a director's cut of the film was shown in theaters for one night only, and it wasn't just a abridged R-rated version. It was a decidedly gorier unrated cut, is what the quote says from the site, reported by Deadline. And so, because of that, the MPAA is actually going to potentially sanction IFC, who directed the movie, because they didn't obtain a waiver, and they're in violation of the rating system rules, and basically, the MPAA is, for lack of a better word, jerking off IFC because they did something a little risque. And I think you'll find here at Sickle and Ifrit, we think the MPAA is the greatest thing that man has ever invented, because it's the dumbest thing that man has ever invented. And that's just exemplary of what mankind can do to themselves.
As the Holy Grail, one of the characters from Holy Grail would put it, is, "I'm being oppressed! I'm being oppressed!" And that's like all the MPAA ever does, is just oppress people. It's what it feels like. It's just oppressing people to make sure that they're following in line with everything that they do, because they control how we view movies.
Yeah. And the real big hitter here is that the release date was December 14th, and so if they can't fix the movie or get this stuff figured out, then they basically can't release the movie in theaters, because theaters won't take the movie that's unrated, because the MPAA apparently controls all the theaters, even though nothing is legal. This is no legal binding. This whole 17 and over thing is a bunch of baloney. But
yeah.
That's all.
Yep.
I just wanted to kind of rip the MPAA out because they don't deserve to do what they do. I don't think that anything happens from the MPAA that is helpful in any way.
Yeah. I think it started out with the right idea of, well, we don't want to traumatize kids too early with certain pieces of material, and now it's escalated into this power trip of old white guys.
You're like, really, in reality, a lot of that might come back to, like, just don't let your kids watch bad stuff, and if they were going to watch it, they're going to watch it without you anyway. Like, if a kid turns on the TV, like, unless you lock the TV out, they're going to see whatever's on. And you can't be around your kids all the time, I guess. So, I don't know.
Fact of life.
I'm a huge proponent of that regulation doesn't need to be done in any way, shape, or form. But that's just a demon's take on it. And you don't have to take that to the bank, because demons don't have the ethical system that you do, humans. But we're out of time. We're actually over time for today. So thanks for listening. Make sure to like, comment, subscribe to our podcast if you like it. Let us know in the comments all the stuff we messed up so we can read it and feel sad about ourselves.
Sweet.
Yep.
That sounds great. Mm-hmm. Enjoy. I hope you enjoyed your extra 3 minutes.
Yeah. You got 3 minutes of sick Olin Ifrit time. I was gonna say like sick time with us, but it didn't work out. But
it was so close though. That was almost really cute. A little cute little pun there.
All right, bye everyone. See you next time.
Bye.